What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Good afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. It's Wednesday, August 21st, 2024, and you are listening live to 106.7 The Fan. We are taking you all the way up to 6:15 and Nats baseball pregame tonight right here on G&D. Another chance for you to win Jason Aldean tickets. He's at Jiffy Lube Live this month. We're giving those away at 4 o'clock. And we've got a guest from the Sports Business Journal who broke the story last night that DC was putting together funds to try to get intel on a new stadium, possibly at the RFK site. We will get the details coming up at 3 with the journalist who broke that story. Danny, what's up?
What do you say, dude? Gorgeous day outside today. Got some pickleball in, which is neither here nor there, but it was a wonderful evening last night. The lady wife surprised me a couple days early for the birthday, went out to Wolf Trap and saw some guy named Jerry Seinfeld do stand-up.
Oh, the new comedian.
The new hotness.
I heard this guy. He's like him and Matt Rife. They both sit there, and they're like 24 and handsome. And
yeah.
They work the crowd.
Yeah, one sounds like a regular human. The other puts on a voice. But anyway, Jerry was awesome. The what was funny is I did a little Instagram post. I didn't know what was happening. My wife took me, and this is really cool. Just, you know, smiling face. Hey, look at this. I'm at Jerry Seinfeld. I'm going to see this up-and-coming comic named Jerry Seinfeld. First comment right away, he's pretty established. Just good for you, buddy. And I, of course, like, I'm playing on. I'm like, wait, he is? I don't know if I know him. The person in comedy. I've never heard of Seinfeld. Anyway, it was spectacular. It was awesome. It was really cool. A guy I know actually from New York opened for him. A guy named Ryan Hamilton, who we all said back then when he was we were doing shows together. You're like, that guy sounds a lot like Jerry Seinfeld. So Seinfeld had him open because it sounds so much like Seinfeld. It's like a good Seinfeld appetizer. It's like an appetizer of steak before you eat a different cut of steak. So that was really fun. So here's my story from last night. I won't bore you with all the details, but he was great. Wolf Trap's awesome. Super, super fun. About 7 minutes into Seinfeld's set, he did over an hour. Somebody kind of like shouted something out. It wasn't like in a heckling, mean way. It wasn't like one of those dumb Matt Rife videos where he's like, so what do you do? And what do you do? But oh my God, you do that high. And like, and you know, then it goes viral. But someone shouted something out and they went back and forth and it was fine. Then there was more shouting. And finally to the point where he goes, what's that? What's going on? What is it? Somebody had passed out or fainted or had some sort of medical emergency right there in like the second row. We couldn't see who it was, obviously, because we were up in the high boxes, and everybody back on the lawn had no clue what was happening.
Plus, I'm sure the stage is lit and the crowd is not, so it's
exactly
dark where they are.
So only people in the first couple of rows can see it, and somebody's like finally shrieking enough, and it's like incoherent, but she's obviously alarmed that someone she's with has either fallen ill or some serious medical situation. So he's going, wait, okay, is he okay? Like, I'm going to do the bit anymore. I was like, is he okay? Like, what's going on? And he's like, okay, yep, so I think we need some help over here, and has to handle that. And while there's kind of silence, everyone's like, oh my God, like what is happening? I turn to my wife, and I go, the exact same thing happened to me my first time on stage at the DC Improv. First time I ever was paid to do stand-up comedy forever ago. I opened for a guy named Alan Havey. And the first show, a bachelorette party, was three sheets to the wind, and they're chirping and talking. I'm trying to deal with them, but you know, I don't want to do much crowd work because he told me not to. And one of them passes out and they freak out. I didn't know what to do. I'd never dealt with anything like that before. So I panicked to such a high degree that I tried to leave the stage to go get help. They're aware. They're like, and one of the manager had come out to that point and goes, get back out there. And I'm like, what the bleep? I do? And so we're all just sort of standing there watching it take place and medical attention to get the person out of there. And I remember, like, the audience was great about it, but I finally said after like a couple minutes, I was like, you know, when I went to stand-up comedy school, they did not talk about this as what you're supposed to do right now. And everyone was nice, gave me a round of applause, we kind of started again, and I went through it. He handled that situation, you might expect, a little bit better than I did.
I bet it wasn't
the first time. It wasn't his first time at all. And he literally said, as soon as I said that to my wife, he goes, every comedian's had this happen to him. Some of us multiple times. He goes, I was here 40 years ago. Which, by the way, what? He said, I was here on this stage 40 years ago, opening up for Frankie Valli when he was on the road. And within 30 seconds, everyone who was like concerned after this guy gets dragged out, you could see the ambulance lights still going. They're not ripping the siren because there's a show going on. But you could see like what's happening in the aftermath is right there. And within 30 seconds, he was back doing his material, doing shtick, and had the audience seat out of the palm of his hand. Just incredible.
I would love to see him live because he's a living legend. Mm-hmm. I've told you this before, and I'm not trying to now yuck your yum, but because we're talking Jerry Seinfeld, I find him to be an off-putting person a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I watch comedians in cars getting coffee with coffee beans or whatever that show is.
Sure is, yeah.
And it's great because I'm not a car guy, but the guests are really good and it's mostly entertaining. But his general shtick, all the way back to Seinfeld, has been, I'm bothered by you, in a way. And I don't know where the bit stops and the actual person starts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm supposed to think it's funny that you're not being that nice to the waiter or the waitress ends, but then you're an actual dad and a husband now, and you're still being weird to people. I've just always kind of found him to be a little bit of a jerk, and maybe he's the nicest guy in the world. But when all the comedians get together for something or he's at an event, they always joke on him as if that's how he is all the time.
That's how he is.
So I have to assume when I watched Kevin Hart honored at the Kennedy Center and the big event where Jerry Seinfeld came out for him, or Dave Chappelle or any of these other guys, where he's shown up and kind of given his I'm Jerry Seinfeld blessing,
mm-hmm.
they all kind of make fun of just how much he is to deal with a little bit. I don't know. It's weird, but all-time success. The show, Hall of Fame, his stand-up career, top 10 all-time, I'm sure, maybe top 5, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But just if you're asking me for, like, here we are in an election season, a likability score, I do not think he'd be fun to hang out with. I have no interest in like meeting him necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm in the minority on that.
You're not.
But he just seems to me like, I don't know, kind of an off-putting dude.
Which I think is true. And I think that's what makes the show that much more remarkable, is because that's who he is. And he's very open about that. I mean, it's a huge part of his act. Where, like, one of the, and again, it's never good, like, when you're quoting somebody's bits the next day, but that's one of his essential bits where he's like, I'm very happy being miserable. Like, the thing I enjoy the most is complaining about the thing. And my wife gets very upset about it, but I love the complaining part. That's the part I like. Like, I don't want to see your phone. I don't want, because it takes me away from my phone. All the different things where you're like, God, this is a curmudgeon. It's very real. The fact that he is that way, so is Larry David. I can't, by the way, this is blasphemy for a comic to say, I can't watch Curb Your Enthusiasm. I know it's genius. I know these guys behind Seinfeld. These are comedic masters. I find Larry David on that show makes my skin crawl so much, I can't do it. I can't enjoy myself watching it.
That's kind of what I'm getting.
And that's to your point, so I understand it. I'm telling you, the stand-up craft and how good he is at it is... You can look past it. Or you can. I mean, it's not for everybody. But
no,
he's
see
so
him,
good.
And I'm sure I would laugh because I think just his general observations on normal everyday things are smart and witty enough that it would make me laugh.
Yep.
I like that. I'm a Dave Chappelle guy.
Mm-hmm.
I like Bill Burr, Shane Gillis. I mean, there's plenty of people now that I love.
So many different styles, too.
But I'm a stand-up comedy mark. I'm a big Danny Ruye guy. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Mm-mm.
There's a lot of comedians that I like. I'd go watch him. I'd have a good time.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I have, like, I'd love to, if I could have a dinner and invite a few people, Chappelle's high on that list.
Yeah.
I could get 100 people, Jerry Seinfeld ain't getting an invite.
Which I get. And that's, so there are two guys that are in this school, and I know we have a lot to talk about, but Seinfeld's
we're doing this for 4 hours.
We're doing Danny reviewing comics.
We're just talking about Jerry Seinfeld last night.
Jerry Seinfeld and Ricky Gervais are both like that, where like these are like normal socially.
Yes.
These are off-putting, challenging people to deal with, but they're so good at their thing, and they do shows where they're both likable and not likable. Does that make sense?
Gervais, I have not seen like as an everyday guy acting that way. I've only seen him on stage. Maybe he does that.
He is. I promise.
The example I'll give you of Seinfeld is I'll go back to comedians and cars with coffee and carrots and whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
That show, it's just like him and another celebrity. They're walking into a little diner in some town or they're going into a coffee shop or whatever. And like people are coming up and they're on camera. It's just like Hard Knocks or something.
Uh-huh.
You're just walking around. You're mic'd up. You're on camera. And instead of someone saying hi to you and you're like, hello, you know, I'm making up an example of this. But like someone will say hi and he'll be like, I don't know you, and he'll like walk past them. And it's like,
yeah,
that's not funny to me.
Right.
It's very weird. Like a waitress will come over and pour them their coffee or whatever, and he'll make an odd comment that like when I was 16 maybe would have been hilarious. But I don't know. The whole vibe he gives off is for me. It's just not.
There's a famous moment. It's viral, whether you've seen it or not. But the pop star Kesha, who's a big Seinfeld fan.
I know exactly where you're going with this.
Like loves him and is so excited, like tried to come up at some premiere or some sort of thing to give him a hug. And he goes, no, thank you. I'm good.
He's like, I don't do that.
Yeah.
And she's like, I just want to give you a hug.
Which is so
he's like,
weird.
No, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Like, he's being dead serious. Yeah. He's like, it's I'm like, fine. Oh. And I want to say she like tries to shake his hand and he's like, no, we're good.
No, that's
like,
it.
Like, that'll be all for you, weird
right.
lady.
But you think about the run of the show where he's a likable character. I'm telling you, like, Ricky Gervais turning the original British Office, I think it's one of the finest examples of comedy in human history. His character is loathsome and irritating and impossible to like. Steve Carell, you know, played that version of it in the American Office. And Steve Carell's the nicest, most likable dude of all time. But to convert yourself to that for a role and to have it still be funny is incredible. Such high level stuff. And Seinfeld sort of did that in reverse. Offstage, he's short and gruff and irritating and irritated all the time and kind of permanently on edge. And his character on the show is just Jerry. It works out for me. Everyone loves me. It's amazing.
I'm glad you had fun.
Oh, it was great.
Sounds like this Seinfeld guy's got a shot.
He's going to make it.
He's going to do okay. Mm-hmm. The fact that somebody commented to tell you that he's been a comedian for a while is what is wrong with everything. The inability to notice when someone's joking and or just have any sense of humor.
Actually, he's pretty famous.
That guy definitely comments on every picture about the thing in the background, which is my least favorite bit. Like, I post a picture with me and my kid or something, and, like, the clock in the background is, different than the stove clock. Yeah. And he's like, oh, you should get your clock synced up. It's like, stupid.
Your stove clock is 40 seconds slow.
That's not the point of the picture. Whatever the thing that you see, like, why don't you clean off your kitchen table first? Go away, person. Look at the picture or don't, but either way,
right.
Do it somewhere else because I'm done with you now, you know? But very cool. And your birthday is Friday, I believe?
Yeah, what's today? The 21st? Yeah, it's Friday.
So were we going to do anything as a show?
I don't think so.
Garris, do we want to do anything as a show? Do we want to do some cookies? Maybe some, you don't really eat anything now.
Yeah.
If you don't eat in the morning, will be hungry?
Yeah, we'll do something. Do you want to, let's get subs or something. Some subs. I'll pick them up.
Big sub. I don't think on your birthday.
Yeah, why not? I don't care.
As long as it's not a sub with like pine nuts on it or something that you like to kill.
I want to get a pine nut sub.
Well, it is a rule.
Doesn't that sound good?
Everybody that has listened to this show for a long time knows if you are a producer of this radio program, you have to be allergic to a bunch of things, specifically nuts,
mm-hmm.
but also other things.
And it's a requirement that Danny wants to kill me.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's typically how it goes. Yeah.
Well, I'm like, here, try these. Oh, that's right. That'll kill you. Ugh.
We were at a baseball game last night. My son loves eating peanuts.
Sure.
It's like, he can't crack them. I have to crack them. I do all the work. It's like picking crabs for someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just pour all the peanuts into a cup and then he eats them. But he wanted to like ask people around us if they wanted a peanut. I'm like, uh-uh. Like, not in 2024, my guy.
No, you can't do that.
Like, there's some food you can offer.
That's assault, brother.
You want to offer a potato chip? We got that. But this peanut here, this is a weapon. You know, we got to keep this one for us.
We can take over a lot of metropolitan areas.
I won't expound upon this any more than the quick deets here because nobody cares. But we just got the Rouillet update,
mm-hmm.
the Paulson update.
Oh,
it is a big day on the Paulson front. We got in one fell swoop today. First day of kindergarten. First steps for the baby.
Whoa.
Both in one
day.
So as if I was already emotional enough with my baby girl going to kindergarten today and not wanting anything to do with me when she walked into the classroom. My baby took her first steps today.
Wow.
So just over here with white in my beard, feeling like a big
look at that.
Goose.
So this is getting very similar.
But at least I wasn't there and my wife had to send me a video. So that's good. That's
isn't that
good.
The best? the kindergarten drop-off thing, or the, you know, the school drop-off thing, I was expecting this like grand emotional moment, you know, where it's like, we're letting each other go, and like doves were, you know, it's a John Woo movie and everything. And my son at the time, this is my oldest now, goes, bye dad, just marched into the classroom with his backpack. Yeah. I mean, if
I think you want that more than what the alternative. Like, I talked to one guy who was like, yeah, we didn't know what it was going to happen. My little guy didn't go to preschool or anything. This was the first time, so we thought there could be some major fireworks. He's like, it went seamlessly. It was easy. But yeah, you'd rather almost the, see ya, and I'm fine.
Right.
Then whatever.
Yeah, it's better than the clinging thing where the where professionals have to get involved to pry the child off, which I saw a drop off yesterday.
You don't want that.
But I wanted some sort of emotion, like, I'll miss you, dad, or I love you, big guy, or something. Some acknowledgement, and just trudged in there like it was nothing.
They were all color. Like, they got in and they colored at their little desk.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the focus.
Yeah.
Right? It was strategic.
You got to get color.
Probably.
Yeah.
Like, let's get color. And I'm like, I'm going to leave. I'm get down on a knee for a little chat. And I'm like, I'm going to leave now.
Just Danny Tanner.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, you're still here. Okay.
Dad, I got a color. Can you get out of here?
Giving her a little Danny Tanner message that
you're
I put
so
together
cringe,
the
Dad.
Night before about being nice to everyone and whatnot. And she's like, whenever you're ready.
Yeah.
There's the door. Don't let it hit you.
Dad, don't you have to leave now?
All right. Let's talk sports.
Yes.
What say you?
Mm-hmm.
Grant and Danny with you here on The Fan, taking you all the way up to 6:15 today. Dan Quinn was asked what position groups he's been most impressed by at camp, where he feels best. I don't know that he would say these are the best position groups on the roster, but the areas where he's been impressed and really feels good about the progress they're making are tight end and safety. And I'm not necessarily surprised, because at tight end, Zach Ertz is still healthy. So you've got Ertz, who's going to be able to block and catch. Bates, who's an awesome blocker and has been really good on some of the read option stuff they've done. Ben Sinnott, who looks like a weapon and looks tough to tackle. Every single catch he makes ends up with a car crash. I saw someone tweet that, and I'm like, that's a great line.
That's a great way to put it.
It's just so true. Like, there's no, he caught the ball, he got tackled soon thereafter. It's just that Cooley-esque dog pile to get him to the ground thing. And then Cole Turner is their fourth tight end with the big catch radius and the athleticism. Can't really help you in line as a blocker very much, I don't think. But he's certainly been more physical early in this preseason than he was last year. So I could see being excited about that group. They've got a depth, you know, project, a practice squad type guy if they choose to go that route. And Colson Yankoff, who's been pretty good as well. At safety, which is a way better position for this team in the secondary than corner, Jeremy Chinn, Quan Martin, Derek Forrest, Jeremy Reeves, Percy Butler, and they drafted Dominique Hampton in the fifth round, who you want that guy getting off the bus first.
Yeah.
He looks like a football player. He's had some good moments. And the steal of maybe free agency for them after the draft, one of the great stories of their camp, has been this guy, Tyler Owens, straight out of the movie Twisters. If you can feel it, chase it. You got to do the Twister sign right here. Glenn Powell. But Chinn, Martin, Forrest, Reeves, Butler, Hampton, Owens. That's seven guys for maybe five spots. I think they might keep six safeties just because the room's that deep. But they're loaded up at that position with pretty good players. They don't have stars, but Martin looks like he's going to have a decent year. They love the versatility of the Swiss Army knife Chinn.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the excitement about safety.
I do too. And I try to quantify it this way when I heard Dan Quinn's comments. How many tight ends are they keeping? Do you think four? Or is it three?
I would guess three and maybe Turner on P-Squad.
Yeah, two-thirds of them are different than last year. That's a massive change. Zach Ertz, Ben Sinnott. So there you go, right? So if you looked at last year's group versus this year's group, it's, you know, older Logan Thomas and John Bates and sort of, you know, Cole Turner's kind of around. Armani Rogers was hurt. So they've turned over a lot of guys at that position. Same with safety. I think they're probably keeping six. Just sort of thinking again, some special teams guys, the versatility there. They've added a number of pieces to that room. You mentioned a couple of them, and Jeremy Chinn was one of their headliners in free agency. So there's been a lot of change at those spots. Some others they haven't really turned over as much, but those are two of the couple that they've really done some work on.
One of the rookie starting quarterbacks we were wondering about, is he going to start, is he not? Now officially named the number one for his team on the depth chart. We'll tell you who of those rookie drafted first round picks just got named starter in a moment. And then I want to dive in deeper on some of the strengths position group wise on this roster. We'll open up the MGM National Harbor listener lines for you guys at 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. What position groups are you confident in? There are plenty of questions about the Commanders roster, but where are you pretty content and pretty sure they're going to be good? That's next on G&D.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Grant and Danny on The Fan. The Denver Broncos have named Bo Nix their starting quarterback. This is not a surprise if you've been watching the progress he's made this preseason. He's been outstanding twice, including 8 of 9 passes complete. He, like Washington, has been in an offense where they've kept things kind of close to the vest, I'd say, in the passing game. It's been a lot of stuff around the line of scrimmage like he did at Oregon. But Sean Payton has raved about him. The reports from the coaching staff and the media out of Denver have been kind of similar to D.C., where they're just very excited about a pretty advanced guy who seems really mature, who played a lot of college football. And Nix, like Jaden Daniels, is a couple of years older than some guys that normally come out of school. I think Bo Nix is 24, whereas Daniels turns 24 this football season. Nix started something like 60 games in college over a 5-plus years where he played in two programs, at Auburn, then eventually as one of the top Heisman Trophy-winning runner-ups to Daniels this year at Oregon. He was on the precipice of really pushing for the Heisman before the end of the season. But he was the 12th overall pick by the Broncos, and I was listening to an interview with Sean Payton yesterday, and he said at one point after watching all the film and kind of putting his board together, he called George Payton, who's the GM of the Broncos, into his office, and he said, listen, he said, I'm not the only one seeing this with this guy, I promise you. He might not be everybody's guy, but there's other teams that need quarterbacks that are going to watch this and see what I see. And he said he told him, let's not get cute with where we take him. Doesn't matter. Let's not move back 5 picks and try to grab him. Let's not, you know, move back up into the first round. Doesn't really matter where we take him. If he's as good as we think he is, let's just take him at 12. So while a lot of people were surprised that they took him there, they didn't keep a very good secret that they liked him. Payton and Denver were linked to Bo Nix for weeks leading up to the draft, and they took him at 12. And what is surprising, I would say, is immediately that he's become their starter.
So the last part I'm not as surprised by. If they'd had legit competition or somebody that was worth a damn or there someone was in his way, I'd go, wow, that's amazing. They brought in the dregs to clear the path, I think, for their rookie starter.
So it was Jarrett Stidham,
yep,
the longtime Patriot and Raider, and then Zach Wilson were the other quarterbacks in camp.
Yeah, to me, that screamed that Bo Nix was going to get the gig. So we talk about this all the time. The, sort of making up this word here, the collegizing. Is that even a thing? Can we go with that? Of NFL offenses. We think about it in terms of a quarterback running. Well, what did Bo Nix do at Oregon? He completed 77% of his passes. Not like within 10 yards or this is overall. This is what they did there. Everything is close to line of scrimmage. Get the ball, get it out. Point guard style. You know, get us into the offense. Find a playmaker in space. Let's go. Well, who does the closest equivalent to that in the NFL? It's probably Sean Payton. Right? I mean, he had a Hall of Fame quarterback who, you know, Drew Brees threw it, pushed it down the field occasionally, but especially not towards the end after he banged his shoulder up a couple times and maybe lost a few miles an hour off his fastball. But he was busy carving people up, throwing it to Alvin Kamara, throwing it to, Colston and Michael Thomas and little in-breaking routes and stuff, fairly close to the line of scrimmage. This is what they do. That marriage to me was always perfect. It made a lot of sense.
Yeah, it certainly did. And it's so far so good. Like Daniels here and like Caleb Williams in Chicago, I mean, they seem to be really, really happy with the guy that they drafted. Just looking it up, it was 5 seasons and a total for him of 61 games in college.
Yeah.
Started 13, 11, and 10 in 3 years at Auburn in the SEC, then transferred to Oregon with Dan Lanning, and in the Pac-12 played 27 games in his final 2 years. But the numbers for him were always very, very good. And as I mentioned, he finished third in the Heisman vote last year. Our guy, that kid, Jaden Daniels, number one out of LSU, 503 first-place votes. Then Michael Penix out of Washington. Washington beat Oregon, obviously, in the Pac-12 title and made the playoff. Penix ended up getting 292 first-place votes, was second in the Heisman race, and then Nix finished third. He just threw the ball a lot more than Daniels, even with Penix, by the way. Like, Daniels last year, just 236 completions. Those guys, 363, 364. Daniels only had 327 attempts. Michael Penix threw the ball 555 times
last year. That's wild, that number.
Nix, 470 times and went for 4,500 yards. Penix, obviously, was right around 5,000. But Nix, 45 touchdowns and three picks. And that's one of the things Peyton said he's been really impressed by in practice is he has not really put the ball in harm's way. And I would say the same thing about Jaden Daniels here. You just haven't seen a whole lot of, you know, we see the play-by-play of practice pretty constantly on social media. You don't see Jaden Daniels pick, interception. He keeps the ball out of the hands of defenders pretty well. But that's the breaking NFL news of the day. Bo Nix, the quarterback in Denver. So you got Caleb Williams going to start for Chicago. Jaden Daniels, the guy in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Nix gets the call in Denver. McCarthy probably...
I think would have been. I think so.
I say no, but was working his way into a competition at least. But he's out for the year. Penix obviously is behind Kirk Cousins on the depth chart, so he's the only guy, barring injury, who's not going to play. And then Drake May is going to play with Jacoby Brissett, both getting on the field, I think, at the X against the Commanders on Sunday night in Landover, Maryland. I still think Drake May has no chance to be their starter. The rhetoric all along has been that it's Jacoby's job. And also, the line is not good. I think you kind of throw Brissett to the Wolves in the first few weeks, and then you bring Drake May in there when you sort things out up front. But I guess it's possible, you know, at least if you believe what coaches say, I tend to believe what they're doing, which is starting Brissett in every game, not what they say. But what's being said is that it's a competition still. They weren't saying that 6 weeks ago. They said Jacoby Brissett's the obvious starter, and now they're saying we don't know who the starter is. Mm-hmm. So that's good news, I guess, for May.
Indeed. I mean, the are certainly trending up, too, on him. I mean, the prevailing thought from a lot of folks was that this is going to take a while with him. I don't know about that. I think there's a lot of talent there, and you clean up some of the mechanical things that you could argue led to some of those, what are you doing, guy, type moments from
I'll
him.
Say this. If Daniels and Nix specifically both get off to fast starts, I am going to add to my quarterbacking opinion really high on the list. Age maybe not as important, but like experience and games played in college, which I didn't really care that much about. But Drake May, as an example, is 21. Bo Nix is 24, going to be 25 this football season. I think Daniels is 23 and he'll be 24 this football season, as an example. 21 versus 24-year-olds, it's a pretty big difference.
Yes, it is.
You know, in terms of just life and experience and maturity and some of those things. And not only that, but the games that they played in, right? Daniels, if not for the COVID year and not being able to play as many games in 2020 as he would have, would be there at 60-ish starts with Bo Nix. Instead, he has to settle for, you know, just a regular old 55 college starts or whatever it was. That's a huge difference between that and a guy who played 2 years like Drake May.
Yeah, in terms of experience,
like playing, what you've seen.
Yeah, and playing at the highest level too, right? It, going from, respectfully, the Pac-12 or 8 or whatever the hell it was at that point, now to the SEC, going up against grown-ups who are also going to play on Sundays. A little bit different too. But yeah, I mean, for May, I always had it as like a small percentage that he would start early. I think New England, again, is so bad, and I think they're so under-talented. Throwing him to the Wolves would be such a huge mistake. I mean, that regime, and not necessarily this particular group in terms of Mayo, but the folks in charge, they just watched this Mac Jones promising rookie season. It wasn't great, but a pretty good rookie year descend into unplayable. Like, it went from, hey, there's something nice here to, can we even roster this guy? Is he going to infect anyone else?
Trading him for a sixth round pick.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just it turned into the hottest mess. It's a bubbling soup of bad. So I would, you know, I'd throw Jacoby Brissett out there for a while.
Back to the Commanders. You heard Dan Quinn today saying that tight end and safety are the position groups that he's grown the most fond of over these last several weeks, to paraphrase. I'm not asking you what the best position group is, Danny, because I still think D-tackle should probably
be the answer, right?
With Allen and Payne and taking Johnny Newton at 36 and the group they put together, like all the way down the depth chart. You see Benning Potuaie making a lot of plays in preseason games. He's probably their seventh defensive tackle or sixth on their depth chart or something. But what position group has grown the most? And have you seen yourself come around on and being the most confident in since the start of training camp?
Linebacker. I am one of those, I try to follow what is going on in the league. And not just like who's playing well for fantasy sports, but what does the league think? Right? There's this collective thing. There's a swarming and there's kind of a somebody leads and everyone else follows and copycats if it's a good enough idea. Where are people getting paid right now? Quarterback, obviously. Then the guy that protects him, obviously. The guy that catches the passes, obviously. The guy that tackles the quarterback most often, obviously. That's where the big salaries are. You can't pay everybody. Linebacker, especially the kind of your traditional 4-3 middle linebacker, the tackling machine that's going to end up with 100, those guys were readily available. I'm already blanking on the guy's name that came from Seattle last year that was here for a season, and we said, thank you very much, and go on your way. Over 100 tackles. You're going, wow, that's amazing. It's not. That linebacker spot I'd come to view was slightly more expendable. Right. And I think this previous regime actually agreed with me on that. They were like, we're going to skimp on that. We are not going to invest in linebacker aside from a first round pick. Oh, thank you. But for the most part, they're going, we're not going to spend here because your bread is buttered with pass rushers, defensive tackles. Anybody can stand there and make a few tackles here and there. You need, you know, to be able to defend the pass. Your traditional linebackers kind of whatever. I've kind of come around now that you go, you can't just get away with doing nothing there. I love this group in Luvu, Wagner, McGee to a degree. And some of the other guys, they may move in and out of there, whether it's Dominic Hampton in certain packages or having safeties kind of walk down. I've kind of come to appreciate that linebacker spot more so maybe than I did over the last few years.
And getting Bobby Wagner in free agency
that helps.
Elevates the floor. Bringing in Frankie Luvu is going to be a star, I think, could make you really good. Now, Jordan McGee got hurt, and he's going to be out for a little while. They're really being coy with the timeline, but they said he will return this season. I like the Anthony Pittman signing, who's been all over the place in the second half of preseason games. The kid Michael Walker, who's played some in Pittsburgh and has played special teams in the league, he looks like he can play a little bit. Jamin Davis eventually could play linebacker when he's not on the edge. If you know Dan Quinn's plan comes to fruition and they're just kind of playing him at defensive end exclusively right now to get him the reps that they think he needs. But yeah, I think they're decent there, and they're certainly much improved there. I hate to be boring. I agree with Dan Quinn. I think safety's the spot where at the start of camp, I was hopeful. Jeremy Chinn could be a fit. Quan Martin makes strides. Now I feel really good. Someone's going to get cut there, whether it's Percy Butler or I doubt Dominic Hampton, a fifth-round pick, gets cut unless they think they're sure they can get him to the practice squad. But maybe it's him or Jeremy Reeves is always kind of feels like a lock to be on the team because he's so good at special teams. But there's going to be a name in that position group probably. Maybe it's Derek Forrest, honestly, who was a good starter for them a couple years ago, who gets cut and you go, wow, really? But it's a good room. And this kid, Tyler Owens, who can just, he's an unbelievable athlete who can fly and he's physical and he Texas Tech product, played at Texas at one point. He's 23-year-old safety, long. I really, really like him. I think he could be excellent. So I love their safety room. And I just think it's well put together. I'm now pretty confident Quan Martin's going to have a decent year as well. But what say you guys, 800-636-1067, position group that you're growing the most confident in as you watch these preseason games. Also, the latest Patrick Mahomes, are you kidding me play that has swept the NFL. You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Welcome back and thanks for listening to the program. Ben Peters of the Washington Business Journal is going to join us right at the top of the hour at 3. He broke the story last night that D.C. is getting its ducks in a row, getting its intel on how it could go about getting the money needed to build a new stadium at the RFK site, which seems like a pretty big development. So we'll talk to Ben about that coming up in 12 minutes. I think you guys will want to hear that on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. How about Patrick Mahomes going behind the back in a preseason game? Everyone else is just trying to get to a point where they can play winning football, and the Chiefs are just screwing around going, all right, what if we went behind the back?
Hear me out.
On this trick play? What if we all spin in a circle like we're in a snow globe? We'll call it the snow globe play, and then we'll run up to the line of scrimmage like we're lost, and we'll line up under the wrong guy's butt, and then someone else will take the snap. They're just like having fun, just doing wacky bits. Everyone else is just trying to score touchdowns.
It's so
incredible
hard. How
dominant they've become as they look for a three-peat now. But this was Mahomes on a behind-the-back designed play that there's video of them practicing from fans that have been at practice this month to Travis Kelce on a short yardage play that they called. He kind of jets out on the quarterback keeper. It's almost like a shovel pass, but he goes no look behind the back for the first down. And then they talked about it afterwards.
Mahomes keeps it, goes behind the back. Kelsey's got it for the first down.
Travis didn't run the route he was supposed to run. And then it was kind of a behind the back pass, kind of because I was mad. I was pissed off at Travis.
Back pass was improvised. That wasn't a play. What do you have to say?
It wasn't a play? No, it was a play. The first down.
He was supposed to run a flat route. I don't know if you can hear me on the broadcast. I'm yelling at him, and then he doesn't run it. So,
he's got the voice thing. And so he kind of mumbled out the play. I couldn't hear it. I was walking up to the line. I was like trying to decipher what he was saying. Before I knew it, he snapped the ball. And
out of spite, I threw it behind the back pass, but now it's going to be a highlight. It wasn't like I planned that at all, or it wasn't a called play. It just kind of happened.
I mean, so that's all silly. Like, that was a very much designed play. Again, there's video of them practicing that exact play. Mm-hmm. It was also just very obvious, the way that he comes in for the shovel behind him. But this is what they do. Not only are they doing shtick about it and having a good old time and acting like it was all off the cuff and we're just out here not knowing what they're doing, bumping our toes into
whoopsie-doopsie.
A first down. They're playing chess. Everyone else is playing checkers.
Can you imagine having that much fun?
It's 400-level football. They're acting before the play like they're confused. He's like, I don't know if you guys heard me. I was yelling at him. And Travis is like, I couldn't tell what the play was. That's part of the design, is the confusion of Kelsey's in the wrong spot and Mahomes is upset and now he's just going to take the ball and run away from Travis Kelce. They're just so much farther along than everyone else.
Pat Mahomes has been a starter for 6 years. They've been to 4 Super Bowls, won 3 of them, and been to 6 conference final games. I remind you, he's been a starter for 6 years.
They got screwed out of another Super Bowl appearance in the AFC Championship game against the Patriots.
And the other one, they got blown out by a field goal against Cincinnati. So, again, right. this is among the... Because we're not thinking of it this way yet, because we just lived through the Patriots, you know, whatever it was, 11, 12, 13 times in 20 years. Incredible longevity run with 7 different iterations of how they were. They were a ground-and-pound team. They were a... throw it a million times, go 17-0 team. They did everything under the sun with Brady and Belichick. But in this era of turnover, they're breaking the rules. I don't mean like violating. I mean, this is not supposed to happen. Teams are supposed to experience setbacks. Losing a guy that just got voted, whether you agree or not, but he just got voted, the number one best player in the NFL in Tyreek Hill, was supposed to slow them down. And it did for a few weeks. They were quote-unquote only 11-6. Who among us, and I'm an idiot because I think I probably picked Baltimore in that game, and I'm never doing that again, but who among us, while they were floundering and just right around 500 or whatever, was like, oh yeah, they're done. Everyone knew they were going to be doing what they always do, which is playing deep into the season. If Pat Mahomes is your quarterback, you've been to the conference championship, and you're probably going again.
They are in the San Antonio Spurs part of the dynasty now, where the regular season, just tinkering.
Formality.
We're just kind of figuring it out.
Yep.
Playoffs come, we'll be ready to go. Reminds me of the old Belichick Patriots with Brady, where they said Thanksgiving was when our season started. Mm-hmm. And they would just do what they had to do to be in a decent spot before Thanksgiving. Sometimes they might be 4 games out in front. Sometimes, you know, there might be a game or so or tied in the division. But we'll hit our stride. We'll get healthy and make sure we're ready to go at Thanksgiving. And that's when we flip the switch. And we get on a roll going into the playoffs. And it generally worked for them. Speaking of working, is it going to work for DC to get a plan in place, to find some money, to try to land the Commanders at the old RFK site? Ben Peters of the Washington Business Journal has some details on some of the prep being done in the city. We'll get to that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Welcome back and thanks for listening to the program. Ben Peters of the Washington Business Journal is going to join us right at the top of the hour at 3. He broke the story last night that D.C. is getting its ducks in a row, getting its intel on how it could go about getting the money needed to build a new stadium at the RFK site, which seems like a pretty big development. So we'll talk to Ben about that coming up in 12 minutes. I think you guys will want to hear that on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. How about Patrick Mahomes going behind the back in a preseason game? Everyone else is just trying to get to a point where they can play winning football, and the Chiefs are just screwing around going, all right, what if we went behind the back?
Hear me out.
on this trick play. What if we all spin in a circle like we're in a snow globe? We'll call it the snow globe play, and then we'll run up to the line of scrimmage like we're lost, and we'll line up under the wrong guy's butt, and then someone else will take the snap. They're just, like, having fun, just doing wacky bits. Everyone else is just trying to score touchdowns.
It's so
incredible
hard. How
dominant they've become as they look for a three-peat now. But this was Mahomes on a behind-the-back designed play that there's video of them practicing from fans that have been at practice this month to Travis Kelce on a short yardage play that they called. He kind of jets out on the quarterback keeper. It's almost like a shovel pass, but he goes no look behind the back for the first down. And then they talked about it afterwards.
Mahomes keeps it, goes behind the back. Kelce's got it for the first down.
Travis didn't run the route he was supposed to run. And then it was kind of a behind the back pass, kind of because I was mad. I was pissed off at Travis.
Back pass was improvised. That wasn't a play. What do you have to say?
It wasn't a play? No, it was a play. The first down.
He was supposed to run a flat route. I don't know if you can hear me on the broadcast. I'm yelling at him, and then he doesn't run it. So,
he's got the voice thing. And so he kind of mumbled out the play. I couldn't hear it. I was walking up to the line. I was, like, trying to decipher what he was saying. Before I knew it, he snapped the ball. And
out of spite, I threw it behind the back pass, but now it's going to be a highlight. It wasn't like I planned that at all, or it wasn't a called play. It just kind of happened.
I mean, so that's all silly. Like, that was a very much designed play. Again, there's video of them practicing that exact play.
Mm-hmm.
It was also just very obvious, the way that he comes in for the shovel behind him. But this is what they do. Not only are they doing shtick about it and having a good old time and acting like it was all off the cuff and we're just out here not knowing what they're doing, bumping our toes into
whoopsie-doopsie.
A first down. They're playing chess. Everyone else is playing checkers.
Can you imagine having that much fun?
It's 400-level football. They're acting before the play like they're confused. He's like, I don't know if you guys heard me. I was yelling at him. And Travis is like, I couldn't tell what the play was. That's part of the design, is the confusion of Kelce's in the wrong spot and Mahomes is upset and now he's just going to take the ball and run away from Travis Kelce. They're just so much farther along than everyone else.
Pat Mahomes has been a starter for 6 years. They've been to 4 Super Bowls, won 3 of them, and been to 6 conference final games. I remind you, he's been a starter for 6 years.
They got screwed out of another Super Bowl appearance in the AFC Championship game against the Patriots.
And the other one, they got blown out by a field goal against Cincinnati. So, again, right. this is among the... Because we're not thinking of it this way yet, because we just lived through the Patriots, you know, whatever it was, 11, 12, 13 times in 20 years. Incredible longevity run with 7 different iterations of how they were. They were a ground-and-pound team. They were a throw it a million times, go 17-0 team. They did everything under the sun with Brady and Belichick. But in this era of turnover, they're breaking the rules. I don't mean like violating. I mean, this is not supposed to happen. Teams are supposed to experience setbacks. Losing a guy that just got voted, whether you agree or not, but he just got voted, the number one best player in the NFL in Tyreek Hill, was supposed to slow them down. And it did for a few weeks. They were, quote unquote, only 11-6. Who among us, and I'm an idiot because I think I probably picked Baltimore in that game, and I'm never doing that again, but who among us, while they were floundering and just right around 500 or whatever, was like, oh yeah, they're done. Everyone knew they were going to be doing what they always do, which is playing deep into the season. If Pat Mahomes is your quarterback, you've been to the conference championship, and you're probably going again.
They are in the San Antonio Spurs part of the dynasty now, where the regular season, mm-hmm. just tinkering.
Formality.
We're just kind of figuring it out.
Yep.
Playoffs come, we'll be ready to go. Reminds me of the old Belichick Patriots with Brady, where they said Thanksgiving was when our season started.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just do what they had to do to be in a decent spot before Thanksgiving. Sometimes they might be 4 games out in front. Sometimes, you know, there might be a game or so or tied in the division. But we'll hit our stride. We'll get healthy and make sure we're ready to go at Thanksgiving. And that's when we flip the switch and we get on a roll going into the playoffs. And it generally worked for them. Speaking of working, is it going to work for DC to get a plan in place to find some money to try to land the Commanders at the old RFK site? Ben Peters of the Washington Business Journal has some details on some of the prep being done in the city. We'll get to that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Northside's and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.